This is Naked by the Future Farm, where entrepreneurship is stripped to its vulnerable core. Brought to you by Vlady Meškobrestinska and Nektarios Lolios. And remember to subscribe, follow, and rate Naked to help us share it with the world.
Hi, Jimmy. How are you?
I'm really well, thanks, Nektarios. How are you?
I'm okay, thank you. I should be very up. I'm very well as well. It's an afternoon and it's quite gray outside, so it always impacts a little bit your vibe, but I'm fine, thank you. Thank you for joining us here at the Future Farm. Today, this is a chat. This is a chat from two people who've met before, and we want to talk a little bit about what you do and specifically your lens on how you look at mental health in your domain. But in order for this to make sense to people, do you want to say a few things about what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll let people know who they're actually listening to. My name is Jamie Clements. I am, I suppose my work spans all things mental and emotional health. So I'm a breathwork coach, founder of a company called The Breath Space, and also founder and host of a podcast. And I'd like to think of it maybe more than just a podcast, maybe more of a movement, a project called Man Down. So focused on all things men's mental health, masculinity, and really exploring what it means to be a man in relation to your experience of mental health. That's sort of the broad picture of who I am and what I do.
Thank you. I like the fact that you describe Man Down as a movement now, because it may have started as a podcast, but you have managed to engage with a lot of people and excite a lot of people to talk about it. So I think you should be very comfortable owning this, because it's way more than a podcast now. And you've got so many episodes under your belt, so you are much more experienced and seasoned podcaster than I am. We're doing
thank you very much.
But we met when you were in your second season of the podcast, and we had a conversation about our experience with the Future Farm and mental and emotional well-being for entrepreneurs. And now that we are exploring different facets of diversity, we thought, why don't we just have a chat with you? Because usually diversity, inclusion, and all the other beautiful hashtags are being discussed. When we talk about gender, it's always about the female experience in the corporate world or in the entrepreneurial world. But I think you've managed to uncover with Man Down a very specific aspect of what people are going through that not many people talk about. But maybe you can talk a little bit more about what is it actually that you're trying to achieve with Man Down?
Yeah, so I think Man Down at its core really came from a place of, I guess, firstly, from my own experiences with mental health. So I suffered for quite a while, best part of 10 years with depression, anxiety, and then towards the end of that period, panic attacks and panic disorder as well. And I really saw, sort of through my own experiences of getting comfortable talking about my mental health, a lot of elements of my time growing up as a boy and a young man that fed into my discomfort, and ultimately sort of this overarching theme that I'm sure we'll touch on again of sort of emotional repression when it comes to being a man and that lived experience of being a man. You know, very sadly, I lost a friend to an old friend of mine from school to suicide in 2019. And it's obviously a very tragic and sad, deeply sad event. But I don't know too many men my age that haven't gone through a similar experience. It's a uncomfortably common experience. And I think that as a result of my own journey with my mental health and that experience, I just felt compelled, as someone who's always had an interest in learning, but also psychology, the mind, the way people think, the way society integrates with that as well, as to why is this a seemingly a male phenomena when it comes to the massively high rates of suicide that we see in young men, but also more broadly, I think, looking at themes that feed into that and sit within that. So I've spoken to a number of different guests about their own individual story, as well as exploring specific topics like entrepreneurship, like relationships, like sex, all of these things that are integral facets of our lives. that have a bearing and have can be influenced by our mental health. And really the goal of the movement of the podcast was to, I always talk about holding a mirror up to the listener. So really showing people examples of men, examples of people as well, beyond just, you know, male guests that are doing incredible things, have done incredible things, but have also had their own experiences with mental health, and really trying to realign this view of what it means to be a man, what it means to be successful, to be strong, kind of in alignment with openness, with emotional availability, with vulnerability. And so kind of reassessing all of those things in conjunction with each other to move towards something that makes a lot more sense and is going to make people a lot healthier and a lot happier.
Thank you for that. You gave us so much. We can take it down so many different avenues. But let's stick a little bit. So for me, when I was telling friends that we're having this conversation, and they were asking, so what is it actually that you want to get to? It's like, the big question is it a man thing? It's as simple as that, right? So if you think about that, the majority of founders and business builders are male. And our particular kind of bugbear with the Future Farm is a lot of people being attracted by these glamorized stories from the Silicon Valley successes and the high kind of raises of funding and all that. Is there something in there when we talk about diversity where people are having a different experience, where people are attracted to entrepreneurship because of their gender, but also people having a more pronounced experience of not being able to talk, not having permission to share, etc., not showing vulnerability? And is it something that you've seen in your kind of conversations with your podcast guests and beyond?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, the statistics, as I touched on already, kind of speak for themselves in terms of the problem. But where is that coming from? Why is that a thing? Why is it maybe a man thing? I actually, the more I talk about it, the more I personally think on this topic, I tend to talk about it more as a patriarchy thing than a man thing. I think this is, you know, the negative impacts of patriarchy on male, female, non-binary are significant and vast. And I think that's where the problem really lies. But if we're talking about entrepreneurship and male entrepreneurship and the, I guess, the sort of associated difficulties that people fall into, I think for me, what was the stereotype of alpha masculine in 80s, 90s, noughties culture has created this aspirational man who is seeking financial success, who's seeking societal success in his esteem. And entrepreneurship seems to be the modern version of that for intelligent, ambitious young men. And so if you're told that, and I think this is where it ultimately comes back to, if you are raised to believe that your value as a person, as a human, comes from your output, comes from what you deliver, comes from what you provide, then I can completely understand why you would go chasing after that and why you would run towards that with both hands and think that it's going to be the root of happiness. And then once we get into that, once we're there, which we already are, why then do we see the problems that we're seeing? And that for me is, again, by nature of sort of patriarchal upbringing of typically, and again, we have to generalize when it comes to this kind of language, typically male individuals, because boys, we raise boys to view emotional openness, emotional vulnerability, actually just a knowledge and acceptance of their emotions and an outward expression of those emotions as a negative, as something that is intrinsically feminine. And when you're told as a boy that, you know, feminine bad, masculine good, you will just learn and relearn how to go through the motions of not expressing your needs when it comes to needing help. And as well as that, if we think about, you know, the conversation now around masculine and feminine and how those energies, those forces are at play within all of us as individuals, the act of asking for help, again, is intrinsically feminine. So being able to accept that vulnerability and ask the question and say that I need help is a big leap for a man to go through typically. So yeah, a slightly long-winded answer again, but I think it's a big picture of patriarchy, which feeds and boils down to that emotional repression that we find across the board for men, I would say as well.
Not long-winded at all. It's really important to be also quite specific. And I love the fact that you also clarified that we're stereotyping here to some extent for the sake of argument, right? There is something that made me think when you were talking about this, which is a conversation I've been having on a slightly different level, which is my experience of masculinity as a gay man, where although for a lot of people being gay has been put into the bucket of being effeminate and feminine, I struggled with that because I was brought up in exactly the environment that you're describing, which is all about not showing vulnerability, being strong, being very, and I'm not, right? But it took a long time for me to get through this real conflict. And I was very dismissive about feminine and effeminate men. And at some point just growing up and realizing that it's got nothing to do with gender or sexuality, and there's some energies. And so sorry, I detoured a little bit, but it was just, you pushed a button there. So you talked about the impact it has on young men, boys. It starts very early, right? So we're getting to the point where we've got a whole kind of community, a large number of people who come through this process, who look at the career choices and pick entrepreneurship because it will actually give them even more what they were brought up to be the right thing. And then they start struggling, okay? How do people share this with you? How long does it take for somebody to actually say, you know what, this wasn't easy, but I ended up X, Y, Z, sharing with people, go and see a therapist? Or is the majority of the experiences that you've come across still the one where you go, I had to suffer before I started looking for help?
I think unfortunately, and I think this applies to mental health across gender, we often see people having to hit rock bottom, if we want to call it that, before they're able to ask for help, before, you know, the choice is taken out of their hands. And so I think the reason being for that, one of the reasons for that, I think, is because we live in a comparison-led culture, and everybody compares their struggles to somebody else's until the point where all of a sudden they are at rock bottom, and everybody's rock bottom looks different. Everybody's struggle looks different. Some people are incredibly high functioning with severe depression. Other people can't get out of bed. And those two things cannot be compared. And so that is where I think we see a lot of the issues around people having to go to that place to then ask for help. What I'm seeing, and it's really encouraging, but it is a slow and gradual process, is there is movement on that. There are the sheer weight of conversations being had, I think, makes an enormous amount of difference. I think for me, I've had people reach out to me. You know, I grew up in some pretty stereotypically masculine environments. I played a lot of rugby, which, you know, for anybody in the UK, you will know that kind of culture, the good and the bad sides of it. And I've had people I played rugby with, you know, reaching out to me of their own accord. And I think that's what I've seen in abundance, is sort of, you almost have to lead by example and create the conversation so that you give other people permission to get involved in the conversation. It's less about a push. It's more about a pull, I think. Mm. It's about drawing people into that on their own time, because I think if you're forcing it, it actually pushes people in the other direction. I think, yes, there's a lot of value in really checking in on someone and making sure they're okay, but ultimately you have to trust an individual to come to this on their own terms. And that's, for me, why podcasts and more passively consumed content is really powerful, because it gives people, especially men who have a harder time engaging with these conversations in the first place, it gives them an opportunity to engage with it on their own terms, on their own time, so that eventually they're like, okay, this isn't such a big deal to talk about this stuff. And that for me was a huge part of my own experience. Was I went to a men's event, and a former guest of mine, he's been on the show a couple of times now, a guy called Ben Bidwell, stood up in front of 120 men and, you know, in no uncertain terms, kind of bared his soul and was, you know, the most vulnerable I'd ever seen a man up until that point. And all of a sudden you could feel this collective weight lift from the room. And so I do think we're seeing more and more, to answer the actual question, seeing more and more of people coming to this and actually starting a conversation. But because of that comparative element, there's still an awful lot of people thinking, you know, this will pass, and not actually taking any accountability for it and asking for that help. They wait it out, and before they realize, you know, it's an unconscious thing, before you realize you're at that low point and you don't have a choice but to ask for help.
You're the one who suggested I watch the work.
Mm.
And I looked it up and I thought, that's chargeable. So I paid the £3. It's a huge investment. No, I started watching this, and about 10 minutes in, I think it was about 12 minutes in, I was in tears. And it was A, because it was such an emotional moment, and it came pretty suddenly, but also because I realized I'm not used to seeing tough men being so vulnerable in front of people who would instantly judge them, or would they expect to judge them. And we can put the link underneath. The other thing that I was thinking of when you were talking about this was watching the BBC documentary about Freddie Flintoff, where he talks about his eating disorder. And again, you know, for somebody who's in that space, who talks about a variety of different things and tries to go in, I didn't even think of eating disorders being a thing in the male community, because my brain was so wired to think about eating disorders, of course, always a supermodel types, right? And then seeing him talk exactly what you're describing, and how you just ignore it and you try and find ways to compensate. But all this happening whilst publicly he was at the peak of his career, right? So what can we do to encourage more people to engage with the subject? You mentioned podcasts and sort of creating information that people can tap into. Is there something else you think we can? I mean, is the movement come into that, or how do you see that?
I think there's the big picture, which is, I think, the conversation as a whole is moving forwards. You know, I had a call with a guy yesterday who runs men's retreats, does a lot of men's work. And he said, I didn't even know the term men's work existed until about a year ago. And I'm sure there's people listening going, what are you talking about? And it's this almost, and it sort of comes back to patriarchy in a way again. It's like, you know, women's circles, women and female empowerment, all of these really important feminist movements. We've come to this point where we're actually realizing the massively negative impact of patriarchy on men's emotional health, and also an acceptance that feminism and a movement against patriarchy isn't a movement against men. It's a movement against the things from that system that are pushing everybody down. Mm. And they look slightly differently. And so that's why, you know, men's work is now becoming a thing, because I imagine 5 years ago, if someone said, you know, there's going to be a men's circle, then people would just assume it was something that was seeking to impose power on other people. It was a, you know, just another example of patriarchal structure. But that's not what it's about. It's about reclaiming sort of the things that have been lost and repressed within men. And so I think that the overarching theme is that the conversation's moving forward, and that will naturally progress and help individuals. But for me, whenever I talk about mental health, and this is across the board, but I think especially in this conversation, there are three main points, I think. Awareness, which is what we've kind of talked about. Education, which again, those two kind of come from the conversation. It's actually not only making people more comfortable and more aware of what we're talking about, but also the nuts and bolts of it, and exploring, you know, why you might be feeling this way, rather than just accepting the fact that you are feeling this way. And I think there's sort of two steps there. And then the third for me is actually looking at access to support. So not only it's sort of bridging that gap that we've touched on already of getting people to ask for help. So if you can get people comfortable with the fact that they're struggling, step one. If you can get them comfortable with asking for help, step two. How do they get help, step three? And there's still big gaps in that, because I think we rely very heavily not only on the public health service here in the UK, but also on talking therapy as the only solution. It seems to be the only thing that people strive to get support from. And it's incredible. It's massively helped me and thousands, if not millions, of other people. But there are other factors at play. And if we're talking about childhood, if we're talking about upbringing, especially in relation to being male, then there are other, you know, ways of getting mental health support that would potentially be more valuable or would potentially work really powerfully in conjunction with something like CBT or talking therapy. So there's a few different pieces of the puzzle. And then I think that the real big picture for me is looking at a shift. You know, we've talked about support, looking at a shift in system in terms of moving from reactive support to preventative measures. So how can we actually change the way things are done so that we don't have to end up getting people comfortable asking for help and then actually getting them to a point where they can access help? So how do we break that link in the first place? But unfortunately, because of, you know, the mental health, some people call it a crisis, I probably agree, but because of that, we have to be reactive, but also we can't keep being reactive because otherwise we forget about the next generation and we just end up in the same place again. So yeah, quite a lot there, but I think there's so much that we could do.
Thank you for breaking this down. And it's kind of wonderful to see what you're describing sort of fits very well with what we're looking at through the lens of the Future Farm. I would add community to the steps you've described, because we've heard a lot from people that having peer experiences and just sharing with peers is important. But since we're talking about support, what do you do for your own support? I mean, you mentioned therapy, but is there anything else that you kind of feel helps you?
Yeah, so I think the quite a big theme of my own kind of learning, but also experiences this year have been through exploring this concept of trauma. And it's a word that gets thrown around a lot. And, you know, we're talking about micro trauma, macro trauma, adverse circumstances throughout your life, and all of these having an impact. And we're seeing through the modern research and also some stuff that's less modern, but all valid, and the way in which trauma kind of interacts with our body and our nervous system, and sort of the long-lasting legacy of trauma. And so for me, a big part of sort of my own personal work with my mental health has been CBT and talking therapy, but also I mentioned at the start, you know, I'm a breathwork coach, and that goes beyond, you know, take a deep breath. It goes into how can we use the breath at a deeper level to clear and process trauma that might be imprinted on our nervous system. And at the moment, I'm going through a course of something called EMDR, which is eye movement desensitization and reprogramming, which is a very simple but very effective form of trauma therapy. And I think this, for me, all kind of comes down to this question. And it's something that is covered in Oprah Winfrey's new book, funnily enough, with Dr. Bruce Perry, called What Happened to You? And it's looking at how we can shift the question in mental emotional health circles from not what's wrong with you, but it's what happened to you, what's happened in your life that's led to this point. And then what are the treatments that we can use to help you with that? How can we go back and actually help you with trauma? Things like EMDR, things like somatic experiencing, breath work, psychedelic assisted therapy, all of these amazing emerging areas. But for me personally, you know, we were talking just before we came on record about you feeling, you know, stopping therapy, for example, and feeling like you're in a solid place. I'm about to finish this course of EMDR. I'm about to transition out of the therapist that I'm seeing at the moment. And it's things like breath work, it's things like meditation, reading and learning, and actually kind of immersing myself in this space. And also, I think community. I think that's an amazing point, is societal. You know, we're social beings, and having deep, meaningful connections that ultimately need to come from a place of vulnerability are so powerful. And, you know, things like sport, you know, I played 11-a-side football for the first time in about 10 years earlier this year, and I felt so incredible after it, because it was team-based, it was exercise, it was, you know, chatting with people I hadn't met, it was all of these different facets feeding into one thing. And so that's been a real big learning as well. It's I now make a note anytime that I'm sat there going, God, I feel good today, I write down everything that I've done in that day, because then I stand a better chance of recreating those same circumstances. And that for me is sort of a bit of a engineer's guide to well-being, is, you know, you find that equation that adds up to feeling good in yourself. So yeah, lots of different things mentioned in there, but I think that for me is the thing. It's actually increasing awareness and education around what is out there for people.
This is awesome because you also mentioned, I like the breadth of different things. Again, we could speak for comfortably probably for another couple of hours, but it gives us an insight into how you approach it as somebody who has had some exposure to the subject or a lot of experience, but you're still kind of looking for the ways to get better yourself and finding the right tools for support. Jamie, this was awesome. I really, really appreciate you making the time. Thank you for sharing both your insights, but also your personal experience. And let's keep fighting the good fight together for better mental and emotional health.
Absolutely. Thank you for having us.
You've been listening to Naked by the Future Farm, where entrepreneurship is stripped to its vulnerable core. To learn more about our work, sign up to our newsletter or visit thefuturefarm.co, where you can also apply to be a Naked guest. And remember, subscribe, follow, and rate Naked to help share it with the world.